This is the WOKV Ask the Experts Weekend, discussing things that matter most to you. Local experts answering your questions. Call 855-765-1045. That's 855-765-1045. Now, the Consumer Law Hour with Eddie and Chuck Farah.
Good afternoon, Jacksonville. 855-765-1045. That's the number to call. 855-765-1045. That gets you past me, old Scott Young, hanging out with you, and gets you in touch with our legal experts. Eddie and Chuck are in the house today. Eddie and Chuck Farah from the law firm of Farah and Farah, standing by to take your calls, answer your questions, and offer their legal expertise. 855-765-1045. Lines are open, so give us a shout. Who will be our first caller of the day? It could be you. Pick up that phone and give us a shout right now. Fellas, how you doing today?
Real good, Scott. Thanks for helping us out.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah, we need you here, man. You do a good job for us, and we appreciate it.
So I appreciate that. I've been pitching it to Coach Urban, and I told him, you know, put me in, Coach, and I'll do what I can for the line because nobody else is.
They need it, man. They need it. You're right. They need some help. It's unbelievable, you know.
He's like, hey, if I got a legal question, I'll give you a call, and I'll have you put me in touch with the fellas. But otherwise, no, we're good.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we're going to talk about insurance today, as we usually do, some sort of insurance. But all of us, every insurance policy, whether you fill out a homeowner's, you're applying for homeowners, life insurance, car insurance, any type of insurance you purchase, it all starts with the application. And these applications are written in such a way that it's easy for the insurance companies to find a way out of paying when it comes time when you have a claim. I'm going to give you an example of a typical auto application policy and the questions it asks and the way it asks you. Because what the insurance companies will do, once you file a claim, whether it's for your car, your house, your boat, whatever it is, the first thing they go do is go back and look at the application you submitted at the time that you took the policy out. Because if they can find any incorrect information in there, they can deny your claim. And that's how they deny claims. They do it every day. They go back to the application and they claim that what you told us wasn't correct. Therefore, that's a material misrepresentation. Your policy is void. Here's your premium back. Go deal with the claim on your own. We see it all the time. That's why you've really got to know how to fill out the application. You've got to look at each question and really think about it. You know, these days, it used to be you had an agent. A lot of times, most people had agents. You just go down the street. You got a guy that represents you.
He'd walk you through it.
He'd walk you through because he's seen it. He knows what incorrect information can do to your claim or to your policy. So he'd walk you through it. He's been there. He's done it. He's looking after your interests. So he's going to make sure you fill it out right. But now most people are doing it online because they're trying to save money. They're cutting out the broker. You know, I'm going to save you 15%. I'm going to save you this. I'm going to save you that. Well, what you're saving is the broker's commission because you're not paying a broker. You're going directly to the company to get the policy. So I'm going to go over an example. This is a case that we looked at in our office where a lady, she was a girl. I mean, she was 18 years old, but no, I mean, she really didn't have a lot of experience. I mean, this is her first automobile. And it was the first time she had applied for car insurance or gotten car insurance. Her parents gave her the car. They said, you got to insure it. Here's the vehicle. She was living somewhere else at the time she took out the application. The car was at the parents' house. She was living with somebody else. She's 18 years old. The parents tell her, go get an insurance policy, and we'll give you the car. Well, you know, okay, so what she does, she picks up the phone. She goes on the Internet. She finds an insurance company, and she goes through the application. Subsequent to the application, she's involved in an accident where she is at fault. She caused the accident, okay? And so she submits the claim to her insurance company. They look at the application. They go, I'm sorry, Mrs. So-and-so. You had a material misrepresentation on your application. You have no insurance. You're on your own. She's getting sued. She has no lawyer. She has no money to hire a lawyer. So she's in a bad situation right now. where she should have, she thought she had insurance to protect her when and if she did cause an accident. Now she has nobody. But let me go over this typical automobile application and show you how tricky it is. You know, the first question on the application, and this is what you want to look at when you apply. If you're doing it online and you don't have an agent looking after your interests, you get a really read. I know a lot of people, they do it. They go, oh, you can save 15% in 15 minutes. And I mean, listen, it takes longer to fill out this application than 15 minutes if you really want to understand the questions. They act like it's so easy. You just go online, and in a few minutes, you've saved all this money, and you've got your policy. Well, you think you have a policy. You paid for a policy. Yeah. The problem is, when it comes time to make a claim, you may not have a policy.
Yeah, and I don't know that they refund right. you your
yeah, they may not even
premiums
do
at that point. I don't know.
Yeah. You may not even, you're right. They may not even.
So you need to really, I mean, you're paying this monthly or yearly or, you know, semi-annually. You've got to get your money's worth out of it.
Yeah. But if they're denying you that you actually have a policy, aren't they obligated to return those premiums? Or do they hold on to it because of misrepresentation and that's like your
punitive experience? Part of the policy might apply. You know, it could be, you know, it may be different coverages.
No. Not in this case.
Not in that case, but there could be a situation where part of the policy would apply. There may be other coverages that they bought that would apply because...
Well, in this case, nothing applied. And okay. They're going to refund. They'll just give her, but you know, what's the premium? $500?
Yeah.
She's going to go
Did
hire
they
a lawyer.
Her premium
it's
here?
Nothing. I mean, if she had an injury, she could have used her PIP. You know, that's $10,000 of coverage she gave up. Lost wages, medical, but she could have gotten paid for her lost wages. She didn't have any of that. Now she's getting sued and she doesn't have a lawyer. So she's in a rough situation, and if she's going to lose because she can't represent her. I mean, she's young. She's 18 years old. How is she going to be able to defend herself in court? So she ends up getting a big judgment against her. Oh, you can argue, well, she doesn't have any money. You can't get blood out of a turnip. Well, she's got a judgment against her. When she gets older, she has a job, she applies for a mortgage or applies for a loan, she's not going to be able to get it. Or if she gets a loan, she's going to pay twice the interest rate that anybody else pays. You know, I mean, there's long-term, lifelong effects from this. You know, the judgment is there. It's against you. It's gaining interest. A judgment that's $10,000 in 10 years is $20,000.
It's catastrophic. It takes years to come over.
Oh, years and years and years. Years.
But maybe. I was thinking, like, let's say there's a situation where there was an excluded driver. You know, there was and that excluded driver actually got behind the wheel.
Well, then they would exclude that driver,
They would exclude that accident.
They would not
back
claim.
But the policy, you know.
But she was driving her car at the time.
Right. And she that's was driving where the car. Sometimes there are situations where they may not refund it because you were covered for all the other potential situations.
But the application is everything.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what I would do, even if you're online and you're in a hurry and you got to get the coverage because you're purchasing a car right then and they tell you you got to have coverage, you should run a copy of your application and go home and really study it and look at it.
Or are you going to go over an application?
I'm going to go over. I'm going to show you how the tricky questions are. And you want to make sure you look at the application and read every word of it, because what the law, the case, you know, I used to try to argue, we try to argue, well, you know, that wasn't exactly correct what's in the application, but the rest of it is, you know, substantially correct. You shouldn't have to void the whole policy because maybe one question is not correct. But I'll tell you what the courts say about that when we get back.
Okay. And it's all about how that question may be represented also as to just how not correct that answer might be.
Well, let me read the first question to you and you'll see what I'm talking about.
Hit me.
All right. Let's get back. I guess we're going to break now. Okay.
We're going to take a quick break. If you've got questions, give us a shout, 855-765-1045. Lines are open. We're going to talk more insurance, but we're going to take your calls here on the Consumer Law Hour on 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's News and Talk. Jacksonville, we are back on the Consumer Law Hour, 855-765-1045. Lines are open. If you've got questions, Eddie Fair and Chuck Fair are standing by to take your calls. So pick up that phone and give us a shout, 855-765-1045. Eddie, you were going to walk us through one of these applications.
Yeah, these auto insurance apps. And by the way, you know, I'm looking at this policy premium. This poor lady, 18 years old, first-time car owner. The insurance premium on this was over $4,000. You know, she's never had any DUIs or anything, or no accidents, no priors. And her premium's over $4,000 a year. That's a lot of money for somebody that's highway robbery, I think.
They're praying on her, man.
Huh?
Like a sitting duck.
That's a lot. They got you, you know. But anyway, look at this question. This is what you have to be careful about when you fill out these applications. The first question asks you for your it asks you for your name. It doesn't ask you for your address. It says, give me your name and where the car is garaged. So you give them your name, and you put what she did. She put the place where the car was garaged, where the car was. It was at her parents' house. Then there's over to the side, there's a question which was never filled in. She never filled it in. Nobody told her to fill it in. You know, she's online doing this. And so the question she answers is she gives her name, and she tells the insurance company where the car is being garaged. But then there's another question that says, list your mailing address if different from where the car is garaged, which it's true. She was living somewhere else. The car was at her parents' house. She doesn't fill that question out, okay? Nobody asks her if it's different. She just doesn't. It's a blank, you know, she doesn't answer it, okay? Okay, then if you go on down the application, this is something else you got to be careful about. This is the biggest one right here. Information, operators, drivers, and household residents. Provide the following information for the applicant. The applicant's spouse. So if you're married, you want your spouse. All persons 15 years or older who reside with you, whether or not they operate any of the vehicles listed above. So anybody, you got to list anybody in your household who's 15 years or older. I don't care if they don't have a license. It doesn't matter. If they're not driving your vehicle, it doesn't matter. If they have their own cars and their own insurance, it doesn't matter. You got to list them. Or any licensed driver besides anybody over 15, right. Anybody else, anybody that's got a license in your household, dependent children whose parents are separated or divorced or deemed to be residents of both households. Also list every person who does not reside in your household, but who uses the car on a regular basis. So even if somebody doesn't live with you and you let your car be used by somebody else, you've got to list it.
On a regular basis.
Yeah, on a regular basis. Like so many hours.
What does that mean? You know?
Well, they define it as five times during a 30-day period.
Oh, okay.
So five times, if I've loaned my car out to somebody, maybe we're divorced, my child lives with one of the other parent, but my child uses my car five times over a 30-day period, I've got to list them, because if that kid causes an accident, then you're not going to have coverage. And so she didn't answer those, according to the insurance company, she didn't list the people she lived with. She was living with a family member. She didn't list them, even though they didn't have any, they wouldn't drive her car. They were elderly. They wouldn't drive her car. They had their own car. She didn't list them. So she's in an accident. And so what the insurance company does now, if they think they can get out of paying you, they will do what they call an examination under oath.
Right.
They have that right to do that. If you read your policy, they have a right to call you in, put you under oath, and ask you questions about the accident, about your claim, and about the application. So what they did in this situation, they did just that. They get her in. She's young. She doesn't have a lawyer. They put her under oath. They start asking her questions about the accident, how it happened, and they start slipping questions in about the application. Well, is this correct on the application? Why didn't you fill this out? Why didn't you fill that out? She goes, well, you know, I put in what I knew at the time, and, I mean, she wasn't trying to misrepresent anything. So then the insurance company writes a letter saying, I'm sorry, you have no coverage for this accident. There's been a material misrepresentation in the application. We're not covering you. And the courts have ruled when you misrepresent information on the application, it may be not a big misrepresentation, maybe it's a misrepresentation that had nothing to do with the claim. They can claim material misrepresentation. Sorry, you're out of luck. You have no coverage. And that's what they did in this situation.
Yeah.
She has to go fend for herself now. And,
Yeah, I mean, you're 18. You're not used to filling out or answering these questions. And people,
Chuck, even people have been driving for a long time. Yeah. If you depended on your agent,
right?
Your agent did that. You know who does this for you typically? The agent.
Right.
He knows your information. he asks you a few questions, he knows what needs to be filled out, then you sign the application and you're done with it because you got somebody looking after you. Now it's all over the internet. You're dealing directly with the company.
Yeah, and from the insurance company point of view, they need to have all the information so they can underwrite the policy. They can price it based on what the potential risk is. And so, yeah, you know, they need to have that information, but it does get, you know, it gets difficult. It gets confusing.
But Chuck,
and you have to take your time, you know, and just reiterating what you've said, the lack of an agent can be devastating.
Yeah.
You know,
this person,
you can save 15%, but it's going to cost you a lot more if something goes wrong.
That's what the Jeff, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, this is going to cost her, this lady, a lifelong. I mean, she's getting her life off to a rough start. And I'll tell you that, you know, the thing is, you know, this is a several $1,000 premium every year.
Yeah.
On an old vehicle, with very little coverage on it, and yeah, I'm wondering if she could even have. I'm looking at now all these questions. Well, give us everybody you live with, and you know, she started listing all these people, and even though they have their own license, even though they have their own car, their own insurance, are they going to raise her rates? Because she's living with people, all these other people.
Right.
I mean, can she? I mean, how much would it be with that? You know, when they start underwriting it. But anyway,
it's easier for us as lawyers. You know, when you have an existing policy, they're not voiding the policy, but they're denying a certain coverage within the policy. That's easier for us to work with because the courts will normally give the insured the benefit of the doubt on that language, you know, within the policy.
Right.
So we can work with that. But here, this is different because this is like you're trying to enter into a contract with the insurance company, and it's almost like, you know, you've made this offer to get insured, and here's what I'm offering you as all the circumstances, and they either accept it based on what you give them, and if it's wrong, it's a voided contract, and there's not much we can do.
And they wrote it.
They wrote it.
So,
well, they wrote the application.
They wrote the application. Yeah. They wrote the contract. So the thing is, typically under the law, the people who write the contract, if there's an ambiguity in it, it goes to the other person's benefit because the guy who wrote it should have been more clear about what he was trying to do. You know?
Right.
But
this is a little different because this is you putting the information in, and if you're not putting it in right or you're leaving stuff blank, then it's almost impossible to overcome that.
You know, if she had an agent, the agent would say, okay, put where you're living. Oh, you're living somewhere else? The car's here and you're living there? You need to put this in.
Right.
Oh, you really, do you live with anybody? Oh, yeah, I live with it's very simple. I live with these family members. Well, then let's list them because it asks for that information.
Right.
You know, then that agent can go back to the insurance company and say, look, even though she's living with all these drivers, they're not driving the vehicle. You know, they could exclude them.
They can exclude them.
And they wouldn't be covered and her premium wouldn't be any higher.
Exactly.
But that didn't happen. And that's why it's so important that for every insurance app, and I say it again for the people who just kind of started listening over the last few minutes, you have to look at the application for every insurance policy that you apply for, whether it's life insurance, it's car insurance, boat insurance, whatever it is, homeowners, that application is everything. That's going to dictate whether you have coverage or not.
Yeah. Good advice.
If you've got questions about an insurance application, if you've got some concerns about an insurance claim that you filed recently or an event that you were involved in, or if you've just got some general legal questions, give us a shout. 855-765-1045 in the Consumer Law Hour. We'll be back after a quick break. Local news and weather and traffic updates and more Consumer Law Hour coming your way on 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's News and Talk. Jacksonville, we are back on the Consumer Law Hour. 855-765-1045, the number to call. If you've got any legal questions, give us a shout. Eddie Farah, Chuck Farah, standing by to take those calls at 855-765-1045. And if you got some concerns about insurance, that's the topic du jour, but we'll take your calls on any other topics as well. Again, those lines are open, 855-765-1045. Now, Eddie, looking over some of these application questions and stuff, it seems like they're designed almost to be a trick or a trap or to be deliberately neglected.
Yes.
So that insurance companies are giving themselves a way out.
Yes. You know, the whole purpose of the application is to see is to give the underwriters information where they can say, okay, here's what we're going to charge Scott Young for his car insurance policy. You know, they ask questions. I mean, they ask all kind of other questions about, you know, financial situations you've been in. I mean, there's all kind of, I mean, it's a 2 or 3 page document. I mean, and they say in 15 minutes, we can save you 15%. I mean, yeah, I guess you could run through it and finish it in 10 minutes. But this application I'm looking at is it's 2 pages, but it's a full 2 pages. There's questions up and down it. Yeah, I guess maybe you could fill it out in 10, 15 minutes. But you have to, but you need to understand each question that's there. But anyway, so they the basis for that application is for them to figure out what they're going to charge you. But more often than not, it's a way out. And especially on the bigger claims, that's where you really find scrutiny. And, you know, there's a lot of litigation. There are lawsuits that are filed every day over whether the information in the application was correct. Let me give you something that they've been trying to do lately and that we've been successful in defeating. Let's say they ask you, well, who lives with you in your household? Let's say you fill out your application on January 1st. You list the people who live with you. And then on February 1st, let's say one of your a relative moves in with you or somebody else moves in with you. So you got some additional people living in your household. But then on March 1st, you're in an accident. And so they're going to say, okay, well, who was living with you? Who's living with you now? And you start giving them the whole list of people who are living with you. They go, oh, you forgot to list Mr. So-and-so who is living with you. He wasn't listed on the application on January the 1st. Well, I said, I didn't list him on January the 1st because he wasn't living with me. They moved in after January 1st. You know, so when the application was filled out, it was correct. I mean, do you have a responsibility to continually update the application? That's the question, you know. You mean every time somebody moves in or out of my house, I've got to call the insurance company and tell them this person's moved out, somebody else has moved in? So those are the issues that happen, and that's why there's a lot of litigation over whether there's coverage for an incident.
And all of those details have absolutely no bearing on the use or performance of the driver in question. So,
yeah, but to them it's a material misrepresentation. But if we've been successful, I mean, we've had these issues come up. Let's say you fill out an application, you list everybody in your household. Then let's say Aunt Susie moves in a month later, and you're in an accident, and they find out Aunt Susie's living with you. I mean, we've been able to keep that coverage going because at the time we filled out the application, Aunt Susie was not there.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, and so don't make assumptions or, you know, when you're filling it out, you need to give them the information that pertains to that exact date, what's happening that date, who lives with you on that particular date. If you think that somebody's going to move out of your house, you know, in a month, you still list them because they were living with you on the date of the application.
Yeah.
And, you know, don't omit them just because you know that they're moving out in a month or two. So you've got to be upfront and, you know, you got to just let them be aware of everything that takes place. That's the current situation in your household at the time the application is filled out.
Well, speaking of people being upfront, we've got a caller on the line, Chris from St. Augustine, with one of the business situations where you most want someone to be upfront, talking about concerns with a vehicle purchase. Chris, you're on the Consumer Law Hour.
Hey, Chris.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how you doing?
Good. So I will try to make this as short of a story as I can. I purchased a used F-250 in the fall. It's been a few years now, in October. And after I purchased the truck, it was a certified pre-owned truck. And after I purchased it, I also purchased a warranty with it. So I had taken it back for service about 6 months later for just an oil change. And one of the salesmen approached me and said, hey, are you interested in selling your truck? And I said, well, you know, tell me what you'll give me for it. So he came back. Now, I need to note that when I purchased it, it had a clear Carfax. When he came back to me, he said, you know, I can only give you like $15,000 for this truck because it was in an accident, a structural accident. I said, whoa, wait a minute. I haven't gotten in any accidents with it. And the Carfax that I have is clear. So anyhow, he proceeded to show me a Carfax on that date. There was an accident for the truck that was during the time that the dealership still had it. So before I purchased it, it was in the ownership of the dealership. So there was a new accident on that Carfax that was not there when I purchased the truck in October. So it had happened like over that summer. So I proceeded to call Carfax. I proceeded to call a dealership, and like Carfax won't tell me anything. They won't give me anything. The dealership is pretty much throwing their hands up in the air and saying it's your problem. And so I'm just wondering what recourse I may have.
Yeah. So you're saying Carfax, when you purchased the vehicle, had the accident, because the date of the accident should be on the Carfax report.
It was not. I have the Carfax that I was given by the dealership on the day that I purchased the truck, and that accident was not on it.
It was not on that. But
who provided you the Carfax? Was that something the dealership made part of the deal? Like, you know, here's your all point, you know, your certification, and with that certification, here's the Carfax. It shows that was involved in an accident. Was it part of that package?
It was, yes.
Was the report pulled the day that you bought the car, or was it a report that had been pulled previously?
No, it was pulled the day that I purchased the car.
Wow.
You may have an issue. You may have
with the dealership.
The dealer.
The dealer's just throwing their hands up in the air and saying, hey, we're sorry. I don't know what happened, but it's your problem.
Well, it's not their problem, because you purchased the vehicle from them based on the fact that it had not been in an accident. You may not have purchased it if it wasn't an accident.
Correct.
Well, she based the value of it on there not being an accident.
Right.
So, you know, that's, I think you should leave your number with Scott and let us look into it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense that the dealership could do that. You know, I don't know what happened if one of their salespeople had it and, you know, it wasn't put on until after the truck was sold. But on the day I purchased it, the Carfax was clean, and this accident showed up. And we even called Carfax. The accident was put on like 6 weeks after we purchased the vehicle.
What was the date of the accident? When was it purchased? When was it in an accident relative to when you purchased the vehicle?
So we purchased it in October, and I don't remember I'd have to go and pull out all the paper, because it's been a few years. I've been battling with these people.
What was the accident close to the time that you purchased it?
It was in July.
So it was about about 4 months before the accident.
And you're saying, and the dealership owned the vehicle at the time it was in the accident?
Correct.
Why wouldn't they just tell you? Why you need a Carfax report? They can just tell you it was in an accident.
Well, yeah.
Because they're denying it was.
They're denying it was in an accident?
Yep.
But
they're saying they don't know how it got on the Carfax, but it wasn't them.
Okay.
But he's using that Carfax report. But he's using the Carfax report to beat you down on the price.
Yes.
I mean, is there evidence it was involved in an accident? Does it show a repair? Does a mechanic or a body shop, can they see a repair?
A Carfax will not release any information about the accident to us.
Right.
So I have no idea.
Well, I think you can run...
Does it not indicate some kind of a report as to whereabouts the accident happened, like on which particular side, front, back, particular panels involved or something like that?
There is, yeah. There was something about it was the front driver's side that was impacted.
It seems like a mechanic at the dealership should be able to take a look at that and confirm whether or not it was actually involved in an incident.
The thing, Scott, we can find out. If I know the serial number, I can find out who owned it probably in July when the accident occurred.
I've already done all that legwork, and it was tight. The dealership had it.
Well, I think your claim is against the dealership.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I would think, unless there's some kind of error through Carfax, but Carfax won't give you any information.
Because Carfax, I always worried about concerned about, because an accident, how long does it take them for them to get their information? Let's say my car is involved in an accident in July, okay, and I repair it in July, and I sell it in August. Does Carfax already know that it was involved in an accident in July? I mean, is the information updated to Carfax immediately the day the accident happens? I mean, does it take months to find out to report it to Carfax? That's what I've always wondered.
Yeah, that I don't know.
I mean, how long does it take for Carfax to get the information that it's been in an accident? I don't know. Nobody's been able to answer that for me.
Right.
But I think you've got something against it. Why don't you leave your phone number with Scott, your name and phone number. Our office, we do what we call warranty work. We have lawyers that handle, you know, warranty cases like breach of warranty on, you know, jet skis, cars, boats, trailers, you know, RVs. I don't know if this is considered a warranty, but I'll ask them about it, and maybe they can help you.
Okay, that would be great.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, Chris, if you'll stay on the line for me, I'll get your information in just a moment when I've got you off the air. And, fellas, we're going to take another quick break. We've got Lynn on the line. Lynn, stay put for us. We're going to take your call when we come back after this quick break on 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's News and Talk. Jacksonville, we are back on the Consumer Law Hour, 855-765-1045, the number to call. 855-765-1045. We're headed over to Lynn in Jacksonville with some questions about durable power of attorney. Lynn, you're on the Consumer Law Hour.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. Hope everyone is well.
We're holding up, Lynn. Hope you're doing good.
I am kicking back, having a cold one.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nice.
Watch some football games. I need good game. Get some good football games on today.
Management frowns at me when I do that here.
They do.
So, I'm calling for what I suspect will be just a general question. I don't know if durable powers of attorney vary state by state. Can you tell me yes or no?
We're really personal injury lawyers, but we deal with durable powers of attorney. Most of them have, I mean, generally they're all the same, but there may be some specifics that are different. Why? Are you talking about one in Florida or somewhere else?
Texas.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And it is...
What's the issue on it? What is the issue? What are you concerned about?
Okay. My aunt...
Right.
...passed, and she was under my cousin's durable power of attorney. And she was in hospice care at home, and she had an episode that she ended up having to go to the hospital and had a procedure, and then the hospice company sent her to their IPU unit, which is an inpatient unit, or they told my cousin respite care for her, which she did not request. They just did it. And then my cousin's estranged sister showed up in Houston at the IPU and somehow circumvented my cousin's durable power of attorney that was executed by the hospice employee and ended up revoking my aunt's DNR.
She did want to be resuscitated?
She did. And the estranged sister, like I said, somehow circumvented my cousin's power of attorney to the point that my cousin and I were on a conference call to call and speak to my aunt to see how she was doing, and were informed that she had died. And they did not call my cousin, who did have the durable power of attorney.
When was the durable power of attorney executed while she was in hospice?
The DPA was...
No, the durable power of attorney, yeah.
Yeah, the DPA.
DPA.
It was executed while she was at home.
Okay.
receiving hospice.
Was she competent? I mean, that's what the issue is.
Yes.
So she was. She knew what she was doing at the time.
She was competent when it was executed by an employee of the hospice company, and her mental capacity started to fade. And then here comes the estranged sister and just wiped everything out. She confiscated the body, sent it to a crematory, took my cousin's phone that she was letting her mother use. That's theft of property. And took her ashes and
was there a will?
No, she had no estate. There's no property, no money, no bank account, nothing.
Then what you would have to do, I mean, you'd have to open up an estate, you'd have to appoint I don't know, maybe you would have an individual claim against that person. I just don't know how much money you want to spend. I mean, it's all about right now. I mean, you're not going to find a law that on a contingency. It's not like an accident case where there's insurance. They'll collect money and everybody will get paid.
Right, right. I'm just wondering if there has been a crime committed by the hospice company allowing this estranged sister to show up and take over and... I mean, my cousin and I didn't even get a chance to say goodbye to her, even over the phone, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a Texas case. You'd have to contact the Texas attorney for that. I don't know what to tell you.
Attorney General?
No. You'd have to contact a private attorney. I mean, I don't know if you could go to the state attorney. You know, the state attorney usually doesn't, I mean, they can get involved, but they're worried about other, you know, robberies and rapes and murders and stuff like that. I mean, even if they're not, I mean, I don't know if they would use their resources to pursue something like that.
Could they get maybe a referral from like the hospital administration or the hospital's
go to the hospice and ask them what happened, get their version of what happened.
Oh, that's my cousin has done that.
Yeah.
They just shut her down.
Yeah.
Whatever complaints you have about this situation is between you and your sister.
Yeah, I mean, you may have
my point is, how was she able to circumvent my cousin's durable power of attorney? How did that happen?
I don't know. I mean, that's probably a hospice issue. You know, you'd have to get a lawyer. This is a Texas case. I mean, you're going to have to talk to a lawyer out there. And it's going to cost money. I mean, this is not a case that you can go and find a lawyer to work on a contingency fee basis. He's going to want
money. But again, my question is, did the hospice company commit a crime?
I don't know. I'm not.
So that's something that would need to be determined through Texas authority.
Yeah.
Well, let's say it was in Florida. What do you think that would...
I don't think that would be a criminal
case. Because the hospice company does operate in Florida.
I know that, but I think that would be more of a civil case.
Oh, okay.
I think to me it's a civil case in Florida.
Where you would sue for damages.
Yeah.
Yeah, like money damages.
Yeah.
No. She doesn't want any money. Well, she just wants to find out if... hospice committed a crime.
Yeah, I don't.
Again,
listen, I'm not
the patient, and to prevent it from happening to someone else. It's not about money.
Yeah,
it's about, you know, did they break the law?
I don't think that's breaking the law in Florida. Maybe it's a civil case. I don't see it as a criminal case.
All right, dudes. Thank you so much.
Enjoy your
Saturday. I appreciate your time.
Enjoy your Saturday.
You too. Bye.
Thank you for the call. As always, fellas, thank you for your time. Appreciate another opportunity to work with you on the Consumer Law Hour here on 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's News and Talk.